We wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land we are recording on in Perth, Western Australia.
The Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation.
We wish to acknowledge their continuing culture.
And pay our respects to the elders past, present and emerging.
In a world where the lives of everyday people are preordained by the script that must be followed, a ragtag team of scamps dare to speak their highly unqualified opinions publicly. They dare to go off script.
Unscripted, the film show.
You're listening to Unscripted, the film show.
You can't handle the truth.
God, I'm walking here.
Here's Johnny.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
I'll have what she's having.
Want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Unscripted with Lewis and Cecilia here, keeping you company for the next hour, talking about films. Hello, Lewis.
Hello, Cecilia. How's it going?
Excellent. Good. I'm just checking that I've got the right mic clicked. There's two just, guest mics in here and I always forget which one, but when you said hello, it peaked, so I knew it was you.
You were on the right one.
I knew you were on the right one, because how devastating it would it be if for a whole hour we sat talking and it was just a one-way conversation.
You'd hear me still, but just in the distance.
Just in the distance. Yes. So that would be quite a shame. But I'm sure someone out there would call in and let us know, hopefully. Yeah. I would hope so. But a couple of films on the radar tonight. We've got Imaginary, which is not to be confused with the upcoming Ryan Reynolds film, which is also...
It's called If.
If,
Imaginary
thank you,
Friend.
Yes. If. This one's actually a horror, which I'm keen to hear your thoughts about. I missed this one, unfortunately, but Lewis, you've seen it, so keen to talk about that one. There's also a film out called How to Have Sex, which, again, the title is not, it's not an instruction manual of such. The movie is not telling you step-by-step guides on how to have sex, but rather it's a bit of a kind of coming-of-age film, female-based one. And then another film which is officially released next week, but I'll quickly give people a rundown because there's a special screening at Luna Cinemas if you're here based in Perth tomorrow night. So you might want to hear a bit about that so you can grab yourself tickets. It's called Love Lies Bleeding, starring Kristen Stewart and Ed Harris. So,
or if you want, we have got some double passes to give away for the screening tomorrow night. For Love Lies Bleeding, we've already had one of those tickets has been claimed by David Watkins, so he's going to go see that tomorrow night. So we've got four more left, so if you do want a ticket to go and see Love Lies Bleeding tomorrow night, and it's not just that, because I believe it's at the outdoor. Is it the outdoor? I'm not sure. It just says launch details. It's starting at 7, so maybe it's not the outdoor, because I would have thought the outdoor would have to be later than that.
A bit later, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So it says, join us for a night full of thrills and electrifying energy. Love Lies Bleeding doesn't have time for a slow burn. It's a movie that comes in hot and leaves in a molten blaze of glory, and that's just how we like it. Get stuck in the heavy tunes of RTRFM's DJ Salt. I won't say what it is. Sorry, DJ Chip. I won't say what his last name is. Bit rude.
It's a bit rude, yeah.
Complimentary mini sliders from our friends at Upper Hand and Tasty Pizza, all while stocks last, and wash it down with a $12 Negroni, purchase at the bar. Negroni is such a, like, it's, Kat loves it.
But I do not like Negroni. I many years ago, before I even knew what Negroni was, and to be honest, I still don't know what Negroni is, but I ordered one because it sounded great, and I took one sip and I went, what is this? So I think it takes a very special person.
I don't know, to me it just sounds bitter, and it is bitter, so it's just like, nah. But if you like Negroni, $12 Negroni, can't pass that.
I'm sure there's other drinks you can get. Yeah. I'm sure you're not forced to drink the Negroni, but look, right off the bat, I'm going to say this is a film you don't want to miss. So I would definitely take us up on that offer see this movie.
And to take us up, all you got to do is go to the Unscripted The Film Show Facebook page and just in the comments go, yes, please, and then I'll put your name on the door. It's that simple.
First in, best dressed.
Yes.
But, yeah, go and see this film. What a great Friday night too. Off to the movies, food and dinner, and then, get to see a fantastic film. And also March 8th, does mark International Women's Day.
Ooh.
And this is a very this is a female-based film about some pretty kick-ass chicks. So what a perfect way to celebrate International Women's Day by seeing that film, I would say. So, yeah, a couple of really cool films to review tonight. How exciting. How very exciting. I know there's also a new documentary out, which I didn't get a chance to view, unfortunately, but I probably should mention, although I think screenings for it has finished, but it was a Jeff Koons documentary. Did you know anything about that one?
No, I didn't.
I believe people may have missed the opportunity to see it in cinemas. There was only a very select screening, but I have no doubt it will make its way to the streaming services. I haven't seen it myself, want to watch it. It's on the watch list, but it is a bit of a portrait of the kind of journey inside the mind of Jeff Koons, who he does those, I think he's the guy that does those little balloon animal dog sculptures.
Right.
Which kind of look really quirky. So, yeah, I know a lot of rich people have his stuff. Yeah. So it's very popular for some reason. But, yeah, I think you've got to be a bit loaded to have some of his work.
Fair enough.
But, yeah, he's, yeah, been one of the most kind of popular and disputed artists of
disputed.
The last 30 years, according to this. So there must be some controversy behind
you. Is it J or G?
J.
J-E-F-F and Koons?
Yes, K-O-O-N-S. Art enthusiasts are probably screaming at the radio now telling you. Yeah, so he does the puppy balloon dog things. But, yeah, there must be some controversy around him as well because it's disputed. Who knows what that means. But that's what this documentary, I'm sure, will tell us. It'll tell us all about him. Jeff Koons. So, yeah, I'm sure it'll make its way. But that was a movie that I think may have already finished up at the cinemas. Just having a look now to see if I can find any dates that it might potentially be screening.
Oh, okay. Maybe it's to do with, like, him not making the art. Because there's one of the questions was, does Jeff Koons actually make his art? And said, there's some essential aspects to it too, but Koons doesn't do the sculpting or much of the painting himself. He comes up with the ideas and sets the standards, but the artisans do the labor.
Okay, hang on a minute. That's not... How is he the artist then? That's he's kind of more the art director. In that regard, but look, whatever. The balloon dog is a series of sculptures. Yeah, okay, interesting. I'm actually really interested to see this documentary now to find out a little bit more about him. But I don't think I'd pay a lot of money just for. Obviously, people who are listening can't see that, but that I don't think I'd pay a lot of money for.
Nah,
not very. It looks like a child's toy.
Yeah, it doesn't. I'm sure you can, buy things similar to that. It's just like. Yeah, I mean...
I could go to a kid's party and get someone to make me a balloon.
Yeah, just get a balloon animal. Get a new one every day.
Yeah, I mean, it'll deflate, but, just get a new one every day. Or learn how to do it yourself.
Yes,
and then exactly. As soon as it deflates, make a new one. I'm just having a look at how much they cost. I'd love to know. $58 million?
What? For what?
Koons sold a giant version of his balloon dog for $58.4 million in 2013. And then 6 years later, a rabbit sculpture of his sold for $91 million.
Well, clearly people just have too much. How can you pay that much money for something like that where there's people starving in this world? It's
people
just terrible.
Have too much money. It's like, I don't know, there was this billionaire, I think it's an Indian family, or might be a Chinese family, but one of the kids was getting married. And... this guy's worth like hundreds of billions of dollars. Mm. And they had a pre-wedding. Now, I know what a wedding is. Yeah. I don't know what the hell a pre-wedding is. But apparently this pre-wedding was in the vicinity of like $40 million. They paid Rihanna, the singer, $8 million to sing at the pre-wedding.
Bloody hell.
And then their daughter, I think, was married a few years ago and they paid Beyonce like $6 million or something to I mean... who has that kind of money? That just blows my mind. Anyway, we're not here to talk finance, but I thought it would be – I think Jeff Koons got us on this little tangent with
that's
his art.
Just stupid amounts of money that's just like, that's frustrating.
It is very, very frustrating. But nonetheless, we Sorry.
What's that?
I thought it was quarter past. We usually go to sponsor at quarter past. Well,
I'm going to be doing the review of Imaginary tonight. Mm. And the as I said, the other Imaginary Friend film coming out this year is the Ryan Reynolds one called If, which is a funny, lighthearted kind of look at imaginary friends.
Yes.
The when they did the Super Bowl and they got like the ads for the Super Bowl, somebody did a compilation of all the movies that they previewed during the Super Bowl, and both Imaginary and If had previews during the Super Bowl. But whoever was putting together went, I'm going to put like Imaginary right after If, so they kind of run into each other.
Ooh.
And you think they're the same film. And so when we were watching it, we're just going, ah, oh, this If looks great. And I went, wow, that took a dark turn.
Wow, what a... Do you wonder if it was intentional or a poor choice?
I don't know. It just seems like a little bit too sneaky to be unintentional.
Yeah, I know. But also I feel like someone would have picked that up surely in the editing and gone, doesn't work.
But no, it worked pretty damn well, actually. It's like I was just going, wow, this movie just – I can't believe it went from being – yeah, a film so that was all lighthearted. Now it's gone all really dark and sinister. It's amazing. I will be talking about the new Blumhouse film Imaginary later on in the show. It was in Cinema One at Grey Event Cinemas Iterloo. I went back in time for a second there. But the interesting thing is that Event Cinemas Iterloo. Cinema One, I think, is going to be getting a bit of a facelift, and it's going to become a 4DX cinema.
Excellent.
Do you know what 4DX cinemas are?
Is that the inclusion of the Atmos sound system,
no,
or is that where
it's got like, because we've got the D-Box in Hoyt cinemas,
yes,
and the D-Box is that the chairs slightly move and vibrate, yeah, and stuff like that. 4DX takes it up a notch, and the chairs move and vibrate. There's also like these little water blasters. It'll occasionally blast with water and air blasters. Mm-hmm. And then you've got 3D glasses on. Mm-hmm. So it's like 4D, like, you know, 3D experience. And
yep.
So it's a real like immersive kind of cinema experience. So I'm really looking forward to, you know, going and checking that out.
Yeah, I think it's great. I wonder if it's a way to try and get people into or back into cinemas. Because, yeah, there was a bit of a drop off when COVID hit, and I'm not sure if it's quite been the same since. So I wonder if it's a way to get more people back, and I wonder if it's going to work. That's the question.
Well,
will it
mean,
work?
I do like, if it's the right film, I do like paying for that mm-hmm. D-Box, just
yeah.
that extra sensation of movement and stuff like that when you're watching the film. So, and 4DX, I've been hanging out to try it, but just there was been nowhere mm. in WA that's had it. In the Eastern States, they've got it. In America and in England, they've got it, but
yeah.
We don't have it here in WA. But we... Sorry, we will soon. Another thing we will have soon, apparently, as well, is a Starbucks.
Yeah, I've heard all the news about the it doesn't really excite me, to be honest, because I've never really been that intrigued by their coffee. Or I've had their coffee before, but I don't think it's anything out of this world.
I'm not, like, I'd rather not have Starbucks here in WA mm-hmm. because I like when I go to the Eastern States or go overseas that there's Starbucks there. And it's like, mm-hmm. oh, Starbucks. And it's unique and different, mm-hmm. you know? And so I quite enjoy that. I like having, you know, things that aren't here in WA, and then you can experience them when you go leave the state. I'm just wondering if we're going to embrace Starbucks or whether it'll be like one of those things. I don't want to see like domes and stuff like that getting taken over by Starbucks.
Yeah, and even your little local independent coffee shops too, who kind of, you know, rely on that business morning coffee aspect too. But yeah, we'll see. I've seen a little bit of the commentary back and forth on social media and people's thoughts about it. So
it'd be interesting though, because as well, like in the rest of the country, you've probably still got like the plastic covers and all that sort of stuff. Whereas here in WA, no more like plastic stuff. It's all going to be, you know, stuff that's recyclable, compostable, and that sort of thing. So yeah, it's taking some getting used to. Have you had coffee now with the like the cardboard lid as opposed?
I haven't. I'm not really drinking coffee at the moment. I've been off coffee for a while. Oh. Occasionally, I'll get something like a chai latte, but not since that was last week. They did that, wasn't it? I'm trying to think. I feel like I picked up a. Yeah, I'm sure I will, though. But does it change the experience of drinking coffee?
It is going to take a bit of getting used to, because like when you have the plastic one, the plastic mm-hmm. is smooth.
Yes.
And so it's like there's no real texture to it. But when you're drinking from a cardboard kind of lid, mm-hmm. it's got a different texture and feel to it. So it does take some getting used to. You just go, oh, that's a bit different.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I wonder, I mean, it's obviously been tested and safe enough to drink But, look, I'm all for doing things to better the planet. Mm. So, you know, no complaints here. But
the interesting thing is you don't see, like, in Starbucks and, like, other places where it's plastic, you see the actual drink. Mm-hmm. But in WA, you don't see the drink. And so it doesn't need to look good. It just needs to taste good. So
that's it. Just needs to taste good. Yeah. There you go. We will be back in just a moment. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Unscripted, the film show.
Welcome back, Unscripted Nights. We are going to kick off with a review for Love Lies Bleeding, officially out next week, the 14th, but there is a special screening of this tomorrow night in Luna Leaderville, if you are in Perth, WA. And Lewis has just shown me a photo of what Kristen Stewart wore to the premiere. I think it looks great. I mean, it's very, what's the word? It's bold. It's a bold choice, but, you know, go Kirsten.
Pretty damn full on. It's like I think her and Zendaya are having a competition.
Potentially.
The most full on outfits at their premieres.
I've seen some the outfit choices people have taken in the last kind of 5 years has just been amazing to see unfold. People are really just kind of going with what they want, and good on them. I think that's what fashion is all about. But this movie, I seen the trailer to this movie and I knew instantly I wanted to see it. I have to admit, many, many years ago, I wasn't necessarily a fan of Kristen Stewart, you know, the whole Twilight thing. I seen her very first in Panic Room with Jodie Foster when she was quite young. And then nothing really from there until Twilight hit cinemas. And then there was a lot of backlash, I think, for her and Robert Pattinson in terms of those films, unless you're a fan. Mm, mm. But over the years, I've really come to like Kristen Stewart. I've seen her in – I loved her role in the new Charlie's Angels film. I thought she was the highlight of that film. Other films, there was that film Underwater with her a few years ago where she kind of channeled Sigourney Weaver in that type of aliens role. And, just anything I've seen her in since, I've absolutely loved. So, really excited to see this film. But where do you sit on the whole Kristen Stewart fanship? Are you a fan?
I'm a fan of her. Twilight I didn't like just because it was Twilight. But as an actress, I think she's really good.
Yeah, yep, perfect. This is a film. It's set in rural New Mexico in the late 80s. But you've got Kristen Stewart who she plays Lou. She's minds her own business. She works at this really kind of grimy gym, cleaning toilets, that type of thing, just kind of, making a living. And out of the blue, this girl, Jackie, played by Katie O'Brien, kind of, enters her life. She's this young bodybuilder from Oklahoma and she's training for this upcoming competition in Vegas. So she stops in at the gym and, she's living it a bit rough initially when she arrives in New Mexico. But Lou is, really smitten by this girl and a bit of a late night hookup quickly becomes this, blossoming romance. Meanwhile, Jackie starts a waitressing job at a nearby gun range who is run by this kind of mob type guy played by Ed Harris, who also happens to be Lou's estranged father. Now, this gun range is definitely cover for some other shady activity, which I won't go into, but Jackie kind of gets involved in some drama and then Lou, again, bringing her, new girlfriend into her complicated, family dynamic. So there's, essentially what happens is Lou's sister is married to a bit of a douchebag guy, JJ, played by Dave Franco. And when he is found beaten up and, murdered, people start to think is, who's involved in this, and the FBI come in and it's just this convoluted kind of mystery and triangle of, Ed Harris's character being this kind of mob guy who runs the entire town with Kristen Stewart's character.
And he's got some weird hair as well, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah. It's quite long with bold on top, but he's very, very scary in this film. So he kind of threatens the relationship between Jackie and Lou because he's just a mean father who doesn't want his daughter to be happy for certain reasons. She kind of left the family,
right,
and is making life hard for her and Jackie in the town. So it's got this kind of real neo-noir Western feel about it. And yeah, it's, you know, love, family and revenge are the, you know, type of themes within the film. So yeah, it's definitely like a Thelma and Louise type style film, but it's a bit more brutal. But yeah, I just love that noir kind of element, so, and tone.
It's so weird because Katie O'Brien, I saw her in like one of the Star Wars TV shows. I think it was The Mandalorian. But she wasn't like muscular in that. But I've seen the trailer for this where she like looks like a bodybuilder.
She's huge, so yeah.
She's clearly put the effort in and bulked up. My God.
I know. It's a wonderful role. I loved the acting in this film. I love this film from start to finish. It takes a little interesting turn towards the end, which kind of shocks you. But apart from that, yeah, I really enjoyed this film and I hope people go out and see it. So, yeah, it's got some real cool music to it, some real 80s music. I love the, you know, this chemistry between Stewart and O'Brien. I think both of them are wonderful actors. I think, yeah, Ed Harris is great. And, yeah, it's this kind of, you know, journey that we go on with these you know, two girls who are kind of in this man's, you know, town that's being run by her, you know, evil father who is just doing bad things. But, yeah, great film. It is out officially next week and you can see a screening of it early tomorrow. And I would give this one five wiggly bugs.
Wiggly bugs.
Slimy bugs. Five slimy bugs. So, yes, go and see it.
Nice.
Well, great.
As we said, like, if you do want to see it, tomorrow night, Luna Leaderville has got the advanced screening of Love Lies Bleeding, and they're not just going to be showing the movie, they're going to make a big deal of it. So they're going to have tasty pizza and sliders while stocks last, and then you can also have the $12 Negroni from the bar and listen to the tunes of DJ Chip Fancier. So they can, and if you want to go and see all of that for free, we've got four double passes left to give away. So all you got to do is go to our Facebook page, say yes, I'd like a pass, and give me your name, and I'll get your name put on the door. And you just go to the box office at Luna Cinemas and say what your name is, and then they will give you your double pass. So if you want that, let me know. That'll be until the end of the show, and then I will pass those details on to Luna, and then you can go see that tomorrow night. Do check that out. If you have got nothing to do tomorrow night, you want to go see a good film and have some pizza and sliders and get a cheap Negroni, just do it.
Head on. Yeah. So definitely a movie you don't want to miss. I'm just having a bit of a look at Kristen Stewart's filmography to see what she's done recently. But I haven't seen Spencer, which is the film where she plays Diana, Princess of Wales. Did you get around to seeing that film?
No, I didn't.
Yes.
No.
That's one I need to go back and revisit because I think any time you take on a role like that, there's always going to be a little bit of criticism, isn't there? Because it's such a big role to live on, up to. But from memory, I think she did quite well in the role and was, yeah, pretty much praised. So I do want to go back and revisit that film as well. And then she was in Happiest Season, which was the holiday romantic comedy drama directed by Clea DuVall from a few years ago, which I think is on streaming now.
She hasn't really been in a lot, though, recently.
She hasn't been in a lot recently, but I think maybe she's, you know, potentially being selective of her roles. This film, Love Lies Bleeding, definitely showcases her acting range as, one of those really kind of underrated actors. So check it out. And, yeah, I hadn't seen much of Jackie O'Brien either, so I would love to see some of her work as well.
Yeah, well, the only other film I saw, and I'll talk about Imaginary soon, I did start watching a TV show that's on Apple TV Plus, and it was kind of one I knew nothing about it. It was it's 6 episodes long, and it's called The New Look, which explores the rise of fashion designer Christian Dior as he dethrones Coco Chanel and helps return the spirit and life to the world with his iconic imprint of beauty and influence. Now, when it says return, it's because the film starts off post-World War II.
Mm-hmm.
But then a lot of the film takes place in flashbacks where Christian Dior is showing his time during the war and what he had to do to kind of survive and help the resistance and do all that kind of stuff, and also shows what Coco Chanel did as well. And I was like going, holy, what, my goodness, like, why would anyone like support this woman? She's horrible.
Mm.
Like, she was, working with the Nazis, although the Nazis that she was working with were trying to, like, put an end to the war.
Yeah.
Going behind Hitler's back and stuff like that. So, I don't know. It's hard to go, was she being good or was she being bad? Like, she was doing this stuff where she was trying to get her partners in her business who are Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
She was trying to use this Aryan law of the Nazis to basically make them no longer have any control or have any percentage of the business. She would just get rid of them, and they'd never have any of the business. It's just like, my God, yeah, very underhanded woman. Mm. So yeah, I didn't know that about her, and now I'm kind of like, well, I'm glad that we don't buy a lot of Chanel stuff, and if I did, I would stop it, because I don't want to support a company that she founded, because she's a horrible person.
Yeah, I've always heard snippets of Coco Chanel and her involvement in the war and things like that. I've never really looked into it or read too much into it. I already know I can't afford anything from Chanel anyway. But, yeah, it's one of those things to, you wonder why it's kind of, hushed away or kind of swept under the rug.
Yeah.
And then people continue to buy, thousands and thousands of dollars, particularly celebrities who, have influence and, could be doing better buying, Chanel bags and things like that. So
screw that. Buy like stuff that's good. Don't buy stuff from a company that used to be run by a person that was working with Nazis and using them to screw over her business partners. No, that's terrible. Get rid of them. Get rid of the stuff.
I guess we never know, though. Yeah. Maybe she was scared and didn't know what else to do. I don't know. It's always hard to figure out what people's kind of motivation is, particularly as a woman in those times. I don't know. But, I think I have always heard about that. So, yeah, TV show looking. And it's got Ben Mendelsohn in it too.
It does. Mendo is in it.
Mendo.
And Mendo comes off, like, really, I think, quite well so far. Mm-hmm. The thing I love about it is they're actually using French accents.
Brilliant.
Which is really cool. Maisie Williams is in it as well. Maisie plays the sister to Ben Mendelsohn, Catherine Dior, and Catherine is heavily involved in the resistance.
Ah,
so he's kind of like funding the resistance through his sister and stuff. It's got Juliette Binoche. She plays Coco Chanel. It's got John Malkovich.
Hey!
He plays the guy Lucien Leong, who owns like the fashion house that Christian Dior is working in during the war. It's actually a really kind of interesting TV show, and it's one of those things. One of the things I love about art is when it makes you want to find out more about the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So after watching this, I was kind of like, Googling Coco Chanel and what her involvement was and that sort of thing. So and it is kind of like they're saying, on the one hand she did this, on the other hand she did this, and it's kind of like, but still I think like the balance of things, sounds like a horrible person. So
well, if you're interested, it is now streaming on Apple TV.
Yes,
and there's 6 episodes from what I can see here, so it is available to watch now. Bit of history. We will be back, though, right after this.
You're listening to Unscripted, the film show.
Imaginary Friends, or the as it's been shortened to, is due to release in May. Mm-hmm. But before we get there, we get Imaginary, which is very different to If. It's slated to be a comedy. This is a horror. And Lewis, you've seen it. I'm excited because I love a good horror. I wish I got to see it, but unfortunately missed this one. But is this from the same guys that did Megan?
Yes, it's from Blumhouse. So Blumhouse did Megan, did Five Nights at Freddy's, did most of the horror films have come out recently.
To be honest, I really like Blumhouse, but I wasn't overly impressed with Megan or Five Nights at Freddy. I wasn't overly impressed with them. But anyway, I'm keen to hear your thoughts on this one.
I think that the Blumhouse do a good job of doing horror films, mm-hmm. where they're kind of more psychological horror films rather than like in your face blood and gore.
Yeah.
And there are like people who do those kind of Saw movies and stuff like that. So there is the market for those kind of horror films. And then I guess you've also got the Conjuring and the those kind of horror films are kind of spooky nuns and that sort of mm-hmm. thing. But I think I like the way that Blumhouse is going, doing things like a little bit different. Imaginary, like, is a PG-13 horror film. So
one for the kids, then.
You can take the kids. It's got a bear in it, for goodness sake. The film is about an artist called Jessica, played by DeWanda Wise. And she writes a children's book about mm-hmm. Millie the Millipede. And she's being like chased by this Simon the Spider, I think is the name of the spider, so that's her career. She's an artist, very creative, and all that sort of thing. Having some issues with sleep and like just in her dreams, she's seeing this spider creature that's trying to kill her.
That sounds horrible.
And so her British husband, Max, played by Tom Payne, who's a like British rocker kind of guy. He suggests, well, let's go back to your happy place, which is your childhood home that you lived in until you were five and then went into the foster care system. So we find out that Jessica's her mum's no longer around, her dad is in care, and so I guess she's kind of inherited the family home, and so she and her family, which includes her two stepdaughters Taylor and Alice, played by Tegan Burns and Piper Braun, they go to Jessica's childhood home just to set up house there, and hopefully that's going to help with her mental health issues. So when they get there, Alice is who's the youngest daughter. She decides to play hide and seek and ends up down in the creepy, creepy, creepy basement. And then she opens a door, and behind that door she finds a teddy bear.
Ooh.
A teddy bear called Shortsy.
He looks quite cute from the and cuddly.
He just looks like a browner version of Ted. the teddy bear, like Alice, becomes friends with a teddy bear called Chauncey, and Chauncey loves her. Aww. and they start playing games. But then some of the things that like Chauncey wants her to do become a bit more like sadistic and wrong, and you're going, no, it's a bear, might not be as good as we think it is. It's a great, I enjoy the story, like it unfolds really well. If you're a person who likes your horror films to start off with a quick kill like a Scream, mm-hmm. This isn't the film for you, because this is a very slow burn kind of a horror film. But I did like it. It was like very psychological. There was a lot of your traditional jump scares. Mm-hmm. I did like the creature or like figure hovering in the background, and the camera pans away and they're no longer there and that sort of thing. So you got to really keep your eyes on the screen to figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was great. I thought Jessica was a really good – sorry, DeWanda Wise as Jessica was a really good lead. The story was I could see where they were going with it. I mean, it goes to some really interesting places. It wasn't a straightforward kind of a story. But yeah, I was very happy with Imaginary. Possibly because the whole film revolves around Chauncey the bear.
Mm-hmm.
But it'd be interesting, if they could explore other imaginary creatures, because in this world they kind of open up the idea that there are imaginary friends. So you could have more films that come out. It could be a different kind of protagonist in future kind of films. So yeah, it was I thought it was great. Not too long as well, an hour and 44 minutes. But I just love the way that Blumhouse do stuff, and they don't have to be over the top violent, and they just really play to your fears and stuff like that. I am going to give Imaginary 3 balls with a smiley face.
Wow, 3 balls.
Actually, no, 3.5 balls with smiley faces.
Okay, there you go. It's fascinating because when you hear the title Imaginary, your mind thinks imaginary friend, but obviously this bear is not well, he can be seen by everybody, I'm assuming.
Well, I don't know.
Do I have to go and see it to find out?
You've got
to
see the film.
Okay. I assumed he was a teddy bear that everybody could see, but maybe she could only hear. And anyway, I won't pry too much into the details, and I'll go and watch the film. They've done some great stuff over the years. They've picked some really interesting scripts to develop. One in particular, The Black Phone, which was fantastic film written by the film was, I don't know if it was written by Stephen King. I know Stephen King's son wrote the short story, which was then developed, and then Blumhouse did this. I thought that was great.
Was it a Max something or other?
Screenplay was by Scott Derrickson, but based on The Black Phone, which was by Joe Hill,
which, that's it, yeah.
Stephen, I thought that was a fantastic film.
Oh, there's a Black Phone 2 coming.
Oh, out. Brilliant. I'm not sure, though, how I feel about that. Sometimes they can ruin things with a sequel.
Yeah.
They were obviously involved with the film Get Out, so, Insidious, which I absolutely love. So, yeah, they've developed some really interesting films over the course of the years, or when they were first... I think they first came on the scene in around 2000. So, yeah, plenty of great films. But I think they're getting a lot more attention nowadays, which is good to see.
I think my favourite horror film is American Werewolf in London still.
It is. That's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one. I'm trying to think of my favourite horror film.
Just because the idea of these two Americans, they go into England, they're hitchhiking, and they go into this English pub, which is a local pub, and everyone there's a local person, and they're kind of looked at strangers.
Yeah.
And then they're told stay away from the moors, keep to the roads, and then they hear a wolf and they run off, and then the friend gets killed. And then the other guy gets just scratched by the creature that attacks him.
Mm.
And it's just so cool, when the guy's in his room, and all of a sudden his dead friend comes back to him, and then his dead friend is decomposing over the course of the movie. It's just the ideas and the concept is just so brilliant.
Yeah, it still really holds up as a film today. I watched it not long ago, and it still really holds up. I've got it on DVD, so yeah, great film. I think I've always referenced The Omen as being one of my favourites, which is, of course, a couple with a young evil son called Damien. But I just think it's because I like the score in the film and the soundtrack, and the whole idea of a creepy kid being evil. And I think anything to do with the devil or demons is quite creepy. But
there's a new Omen film, the first Omen, coming out this year.
Yes. It has obviously attempted to be redone before, and there was that terrible version with Julia Stiles in it that I hope this one just does it a little bit more justice than that film. So I am looking forward to seeing what they do with The Omen, and it's not as bad as The, I think, 2006 version was just, oh, terrible. So we shall see. But we might take another break and then we come back and talk about our final film for the evening.
You're listening to Unscripted, the film show.
How to Have Sex is the final film we have to talk about tonight, but this is a directorial debut from Molly Manning Walker. And like I said at the top of the show, it shouldn't be mistaken for instructions on spicing up your love life, but rather this is kind of a coming-of-age story centred around women. But the film begins with three, well, I should say teens, but three British teens. You've got Em, Sky and Tara, and they arrive in Greece for this kind of post-exam getaway, if you like, and they're ready to let loose. And I feel like it's a rite of passage for a lot of Brits who finish their exams to then go, you know, to Spain or Greece and, you know, get rowdy and you know, a bit like I guess we do in Australia. Maybe people go over to, I don't know,
the schoolies or something like
schoolies. Yeah. I feel like this is a real thing that happens. But the girls are determined to have sex, basically, and Tara is aiming to lose her virginity. She feels, you know, the pressure from her friends to do so, doesn't want to quite, you know, step into her next chapter of going to university with, you know, not having done that. So there's this, these two boys, plus a couple of others. You've got Patty and Badger that come into the mix. And without giving too much away, Tara does have some, you know, sexual encounters. But those experiences are not, you know, necessarily what she expected. They aren't the magical, you know, kind of romantic type encounters that I guess you imagine or see on the movies. They're much more, definitely very different. And I guess plot-wise, not a lot happens. There's a lot of kind of montages with partying teens who consume just way too much alcohol. But really the film is Tara's journey, I would say, and I think that we kind of follow her as she, you know, deals with the emotions that come with these particular encounters. And I obviously don't want to spoil, you know, the plot too much, but there's, you know, issues of, you know, consent, there's issues of, you know, yeah, things like that that come into play with the film. But it almost feels a little, well, at the beginning, it almost felt like a little bit of a reversal of the usual adolescent boy ploy, which we usually see represented in a comedic way. So boys trying to lose their virginity, you know, American Pie, yeah. Sex Drive, The Sure Thing. But this is definitely not a comedy. It definitely, there are some comedic moments, but it's more of a drama type film as you follow a particular character through some ups and downs. And, you know, she descends into a little bit of a sadness while she deals with the emotions that come with those, you know, experiences, while her friends around her just kind of ignore, well, not ignore it, but continue just to party their way through Greece. So, yeah, it's not what I expected, this film. I'm not sure what I expected. I didn't read anything into it or see the trailer, and I wasn't sure if I was going into a comedy or a drama. But I obviously, from the beginning, I knew that, you know, what I was expecting. But yeah, I feel like the resolution to the film, there's not much there either. It kind of just doesn't resolve anything. So
I feel this film should really come with a bit of a trigger warning, because. Yeah, it does deal with, as I said, issues of consent and things like that, but there isn't any, you know, they just, I don't know, I'm just trying to figure out, like, you know, what this film's for. Like, is it just trying to, like, have a message in the film that people are supposed to discuss after the film and, like, really, you know, thrash it out kind of thing? Because It's a very hard film to take, and I think for some people it could be a triggering film as well. So yeah, I really didn't like the way it was presented, and I didn't like the way it resolved, and I think there could have been a much more, you know, stronger film there than what we saw. Yeah, it just felt powerless to me.
Yeah, I think powerless is a great word to describe it. I think that lack of resolution really leaves you wondering what the film was trying to say. Because I don't mind seeing a film where a strong message is kind of displayed, but I felt like I'm not really sure what I was supposed to take away from the film. I felt like, yeah, it was just, yeah, powerless in a way. And I don't want to be too critical because I know it's the director's debut, and I have seen that the critics are actually really liking this
film.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
I think the acting was good. There was nothing wrong there. But, yeah, I think maybe just that, yeah, lack of resolution just kind of left me wondering what I was supposed to take away from the film, and also the lack of ramification for, you know, people who do things that they shouldn't. It kind of leaves you wondering. But, yeah, I guess if people are able to go away and have a good conversation about the film and converse and, you know, discuss it, then that is a good thing. But, yeah, not quite what I expected to see. Maybe it's not for me. Maybe I'm not the target audience. I'm not sure. Because it is, you know, centred around girls who are, you know, quite young, maybe 16, do you think, or a bit older?
No, I think it must be about 18 or 19.
Yeah, they must be a little bit older because they're drinking, of course. Yeah. And, yeah, maybe I'm just not the audience for it, because I keep reading these reviews which keep saying, oh, very relatable and things like that. And I just don't remember ever having, you know, I've had nights similar, but not like that to that extreme, I don't think. So anyway, just maybe not for me, but yeah, I just didn't take away much from the film.
If you are interested, like, in a deeper dive of what we thought about it, we did do a Tangent City on the weekend about Rotten Tomatoes and the difference between the audience scores and the critic scores, and how sometimes that can be quite far apart. So we did spend a bit of time talking about How to Have Sex in that podcast in more detail. So if you have seen the movie, or if you're not going to see the movie, want to find out more about what we thought about it, you can go to Tangent City and find out more about those thoughts there. I came out regretting spending my time watching it.
I wanted to like this film. Yeah. I did. I really did. And I thought it was a comedy at first, but maybe that's why I got, but I wanted to like it.
Yeah.
I just
I think at the beginning that the girls are so boisterous and stuff like that. Oh my God.
You're two hours.
Yeah. But then it kind of like went into a bit of a funk, and I was like, oh no, go back to making jokes about chips. Come on. Yeah, so I'm going to give this one 2.5 chips.
2.5 chips?
Yeah.
I am going to score this 2.5 pool floaty things.
Pool floaty things.
Which I'm sure have a name. Pool floaties. Yeah. Pool floaties, maybe. I'm not sure. Anyway, the film is now screening at select cinemas, so you can go and see for yourself. We might be wrong. You might be right. I'm not sure.
I would recommend not going to one of these party islands to try to find love.
Yeah.
I think that's the first mistake.
Yes.
If you want your first sexual encounter to be like loving and romantic, don't go to a party island.
Or consume large amounts of alcohol.
No.
That just leads to poor decisions.
Exactly.
And puts you in unsafe situations too. So, yeah.
This is true. Yes. But yeah, so it's a cautionary tale
tale. I was going to briefly mention something that I've been watching on the old streaming service. It's a TV show called The Curse. Have you heard of this?
No, I have not.
So it's an American kind of satirical black comedy thriller, but it's created and written by Nathan Fielder and Benny Safidi, I think that's how you pronounce his name. But it stars Emma Stone and Nathan Fielder. And the premise, it's a little bit of a bizarre one, but I feel like anything Nathan Fielder does is quite bizarre. But these guys are filmmakers and they do like a lifestyle show of real economical homes and how to live greener. And, you know, they're trying to film this show, but one day, Nathan Fielder's character, whose name I should probably use is Asher in the show, he comes across some young girls selling some cookies. And to look good on the TV, he passes them like a $100 note. But then when the camera's away, he's like, oh, can you give me back my $100 and I'll give you like $10? And the girl the young girl jokingly puts a curse on him. Uh-huh. And then some bizarre things begin to happen, and he continually links those bad things to this curse that's been placed on him. So, yeah, it's not quite what I wanted. It is a little bit bizarre. But, yeah, I did get to the end of this one. It's quite interesting. Seeing Emma Stone in this role was very interesting. I've never seen her in a TV show before. Mm. So watching her was quite fun. But it's on Paramount, which I think you can watch through Amazon Prime. So 10 episodes. But, yeah, if you're looking for something a little bit different, definitely recommend going to that because, yeah, it kind of explores how that, you know, alleged curse, yeah, he just thinks his curse is the fault of everything. But is it or isn't it or, you know. But, yeah, quite interesting.
I'm looking for it. What's that showing on?
It is Amazon Prime, I believe.
Prime. Yes, oh, okay. Prime. I'm not Prime.
Ah, oh, boo.
Well, I'm going to get rid of Netflix, so maybe I get Prime for a bit.
For a bit. I believe it's Prime. Yeah, I watched it. I think it's Paramount, but I think Paramount is through Prime because you get, yeah. You know how sometimes with streaming they come with like a couple of other little options that you can.
I'll leave Netflix there until after the weekend.
Are you still watching something on Netflix?
No, I just realised you're looking after my place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but yeah, no, if you're looking for something different to watch because it's not something that's out there or had a lot of attention, but it's definitely worth a watch. So I thought I'd bring that one up. But I'm always looking for something new to watch. I started watching Euphoria, which, do you know about Euphoria?
It's old. It's been around for a while.
I know. I finally got on the train. And the reason I avoided watching this is because I had, obviously I heard a lot about it, really good, but I felt like this was not my, I'm not the audience for this because it's centered on a group of high school students who kind of struggle with, you know, drugs, their kind of personal life, social media, you know, love and things like that. So for me, I thought, oh, I'm definitely not the audience for this. But given the attention it's kind of garnered, I thought, oh, it popped up one day and I'm like, oh, I'll give it a go. It is quite dark and gritty.
Mm-hmm.
Very dark and gritty. It stars Zendaya. You've got Sydney Sweeney in this as well. You've also got Jacob Elordi, who, you know, people will now know from Saltburn. He's also an Aussie. And it starts out a little bit slower. It follows mainly Zendaya's character, whose name is Rue. She's just come out of drug rehab and kind of enters her life again and she makes new friends. And then as the series develops, each episode focuses on one of the teens within the school and their own personal struggles that you don't really see. It's all behind doors. So, you know, it's giving you that idea and notion that, you know, everybody's got their struggles. But, yeah, some of it's really dark, particularly with the drugs and you know, there's some abuse between, you know, couples. But, yeah, really gritty. And even though the episode was a little bit slow, I have to admit, as I've gone on to watch it, I am a little bit hooked. So I'm going to continue my my watch of Euphoria, even though it's a few years old. And we are waiting for Series 3 to come out. I know people have been waiting and waiting, but I don't actually think it's going to get a release this year. It's looking more like 2025, which is strange because a lot of the characters in this are getting older and it's harder to portray a young person as you begin to age.
This is true, yes. It's one of the problems with having like any characters in a TV show where they're supposed to be immortal.
Yeah.
You're going, you're getting some wrinkles there, immortal guy.
Isn't it weird though watching like Grease and thinking those people were meant to be high school students?
Yeah.
But they look like pure 40-year-olds. It's so weird. But yeah, I know I'm late to the game, but I'm quite enjoying it. I don't think it's a realistic representation of, you know, high school just because I don't think, I mean, maybe in America, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe I just went to a good school. We are almost due to wrap up. Any final words, Lewis, before we depart the mics?
I think I've said everything I need to say. I've put a bow on it.
With
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
Perfect. We will be back next week talking about more films. See you then.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Gentlemen of Pop Culture.